The Capital Investment Committee hearing for April 30 is called to order. We do have a quorum. Vice Chair Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 27th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Ryer moves approval of the minutes for March 27th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Welcome, members and guests. So with a packed agenda today, we will be allotting 5 minutes. And first up, we have Leader Damuth. Welcome to the committee and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing House File 3574. This is a bill that would extend the Glacial Lakes Trail and connect a couple of other trails. It's in beautiful Painesville to Roscoe. And if you don't know where that is in Stearns County, and it's a lovely part of the state. With me today, Mr. Chair, I do have a testifier. And with that, if I could, to make the best use of our 5 minutes, may I turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome, board member. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Steve Peters, resident of Painesville, Minnesota. Really appreciate the committee's considering this request on behalf of over 100,000 people that live along the Glacial Lakes Trail from Wilmer to St. Cloud, and the many other Minnesotans and hopefully people that visit Minnesota that enjoy the trail and will enjoy it more once it's completed. This trail has been under development for a couple of decades since the abandonment of the Burlington Northern Railroad. And so it was started from Wilmer going east towards St. Cloud, but with the DNR's sort of leadership, but really stalled a number of years ago right north of Painesville because it crossed the abandoned trail, crossed another active railroad, the Canadian Pacific. And that was been a real problem figuring out how to get around that bottleneck. A number of us locally have worked for the last number of years looking for a creative solution, actively working with MnDOT and the DNR to find a way around this. What we've used is the Lake Cronus Regional Trail that was built 17 miles around Lake Cronus, where I live, that now can connect, and we actually have received funding for this extension to connect to the Glacial Lakes Trail past this railroad bottleneck. So the first phase of that connector will happen this summer with the rest to follow. So what that leaves, committee, is that about a 7 mile stretch, a little bit less than that, from north of Painesville, where the railroad originally was, to the little town of Roscoe to the east. And there, that part remains uncompleted, and so the bonding request that we have in front of you would complete that section. But most importantly, the rest of the trail is completed all the way just west of St. Cloud. So it's a very, very exciting project. I think we would all appreciate locally and statewide to get this thing done. Lastly, I would say I'm an avid biker. I've biked the shores of Lake Superior. I biked southeast Minnesota. This is second to none. It's a beautiful place with the glacial lakes that sort of cut our state in half, with the prairies to the west and the lakes right in the middle of it, and the rolling hills to the north. It's a spectacular place. I think it would benefit all of us and really boost tourism, which is what we're trying to do for our region and for the state. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, board member. Members, any discussion? Hearing none, closing comments, Leader Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is important to realize the regional significance that the finishing of this trail would have in the entire area. It is used all year round. It is used in the winter, spring, summer, and fall. And then in full transparency, Mr. Chair, I was just notified by the DNR less than an hour ago that there may be some corrections needed on the project cost. And I have received that by email. I don't think anything went in your packets, but when they were reviewing everything for today, there are some corrections that may need to be made, and we are digging into that at this point.
Thank you, Leader Damuth. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3359, Chair Hansen. Please proceed, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3359 relates to swimming pool and aquatic center design and pre-design for the city of South St. Paul. We have a very old pool. Some of you may remember a few years ago when the YMCA abandoned northern Dakota County, so we actually have no place for kids to learn how to swim. The pool in South St. Paul is 62 years old, 68 years old, and it was 62 years old 6 years ago. So this is a long-time project. You'll find in your packet a resolution from the city kind of explains things, but I have with me Ryan Garcia, the city administrator, to talk about the need.
Welcome, city administrator. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, my name is Ryan Garcia, the city administrator for the city of South St. Paul. Thank you, Chair Lee, members, for a few moments today to talk about House File 3359. As Representative Hansen noted, South St. Paul is a historic, traditional small town right next to St. Paul here. Sort of a boom town. The city was established in the late 1800s, really around a single industry, the stockyards and meatpacking plants. The boom came right around World War II, and at that time the city really invested in city facilities to a very large scale. New city hall, new swimming pools, new public works facilities, new library. Unfortunately, as that industry waned rather quickly in the 1960s and 70s, with it went much of our property tax base and a significant portion, actually, of our population. Today, South St. Paul is a stable community of about 20,000 residents in northeastern Dakota County. We have this swimming pool at Northview Park, which is actually the only public traditional swimming facility east of Highway 52 and south of Ramsey County in the metro in Minnesota. So it provides not only outdoor family recreation throughout the summer for our South St. Paul residents, but really for a great portion of sort of the southeast metro at an affordable price. It's not a, you know, it's not a water park as you'd find in some of the larger suburban communities. It really presents, again, an affordable family option for summer recreation. Unfortunately, that facility, as Representative Hansen mentioned, is 68 years old. It was built in the mid-1950s due to weathering of, obviously, chemical components in swimming pool water, but also the elements, weather. It has deteriorated such that today it actually loses about 5% of its volume of water every day. Through just sort of the failures of that structure. We've looked at sort of repair and replacement cost, which is infeasible financially, frankly, and after going through a robust public engagement process to update our citywide Parks and Recreation Master Plan, have determined that aquatics are very valuable to our residents, and we want to reinvest in those facilities in South St. Paul. This funding would be a critical first step in helping us get to that point. It would help us, again, keep that on the front burner. Unfortunately, we have, again, significant capital investments that we're making here in 2024 and 2025 that would push this out further and leave our community without that critical summertime resource for families. So we are, again, seeking that assistance and very grateful for your time today and would be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, City Administrator Garcia. Members, any discussions, questions? Seeing none, quick closing comments, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one thing that I'd like to add is that, you know, for today's world and the future, we need to make sure we have disability accommodations, that this is accessible, that we can, everyone is able to use this pool, and that's what we're hoping for. So we want that designed in from the beginning to make sure it works for the future for everybody.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Next on the agenda, House File 1630, Chair Pawlowski. Welcome, Chair Pawlowski. Please proceed.
Thank you, members. House File 1630, by its very low number, would indicate to you that this bill has been around for a while. This concept of eliminating the one-third user fee in capital projects for higher education was started in discussions 10 years ago when Alice Hausman chaired the Capital Investment Committee and when I chaired the Higher Education Finance Committee. What this would do would say to both systems that you can no longer put a portion of the costs of new building projects on students via tuition. We have had in Minnesota a record decline in enrollment in all of our higher education systems. That includes the MinState system and the University of Minnesota. And we are grappling with how to make higher education affordable. This was instituted, interestingly enough, about 3 decades ago with the understanding that it would somehow decrease the number of new projects in higher education. And of course, it did just the opposite because it made them somewhat cheaper, putting part of it on tuition. And if you don't understand the concept of that, think of this. At one time, bills in the Minnesota House of Representatives required only 5 authors. That was it. We extended that to 35 in the hope of eliminating introductions of bills. And you can see how that worked. This is exactly the same thing. We're not going to put tuition and an increase in tuition on students on new buildings. We simply can't afford the burden on those students. So this would increase the cost of projects in the University of Minnesota and the MinState system to the state, which means they have to be more vigilant and we have to be more vigilant on the cost of new buildings. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. Members, any questions, discussions? Chair, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pawlowski. So just to maybe reiterate a little bit, what do you feel the impact will be on buildings at the universities and colleges?
Chair
Pawlowski. This is enacted.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, the cost of those new buildings, this does not apply to Heber, would increase for those two systems. However, it would not then increase tuition in those two systems on students.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pawlowski, so by that, are you saying that there would be fewer buildings built, less buildings, or it wouldn't change it?
Chair Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I would hope that as a result of passing this, both the system and this committee in the House and Senate would be extremely more vigilant on the need for new buildings, particularly at a time when we have declining enrollment in our systems and when we should be focusing most of our attention on higher education asset preservation.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, closing comments, Chair Pawlowski.
My final comment is, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for working with the Higher Education Committee. I want to remind the members that this is the first time in a decade where the Higher Education Committee has been working with the Capital Investment Committee. Everything you've heard here for higher education, we have also heard in higher education. And we should continue to do that in the future. There was once a time when we made recommendations from higher education to this committee and when we actually traveled with this committee as a higher education committee. Program and building are tied. We need to know how to do both well, and particularly at a time that we're in now with declining enrollment.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. I really appreciate your comments and the partnerships on this issue. The next two bills, Chair Lizgar, first one is House File 4160. Welcome, please proceed.
You run a nice, clean, tight ship. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Obviously, you know where I represent in Greater Minnesota. And I will say that this bill that's coming before you is the less you have, the more it means to you. And I'm going to turn it over to Councillor and let her talk about it, and then I would like to do the closing.
Welcome, City Councilor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the House Capital Investment Committee, my name is Alyssa White, and I'm a City Councilor in Meadowlands, Minnesota. Thank you for hearing House File 4160, and thank you to the Representative Lizegard for introducing this bill and supporting our request. Meadowlands is a small community located off of Highway 53 between Duluth and Virginia. Our community is known for its popular destination spot of the Sac Zimbog for birdwatching. Our request to the legislator for $800,000 is to help rebuild our city's community center facility and the park adjacent to it. We are hoping to make improvements such as replacing the windows, roof, mechanical, electrical, safety systems, and infrastructure to this building that the community uses for local fundraisers, family gatherings, holidays, voting, and city and township meetings. This would also allow us to update the park that is greatly outdated but very much still so appreciated and used by many. The park updates would include new play structures, poured-in-place rubber matting, seating, a splash pad, and a sheltered pavilion. Within this project, we'll also be implementing ADA accessible walkways and multiple play features that will also be ADA accessible. With becoming a mom to our two children came the struggle of living nearly 40 miles away in all directions from cities, which makes it very difficult to bring them to do any activities without some traveling. This is where the idea of updating our park was first sparked. Our community is very tight-knit, and it is also important to many more families, not only in Meadowlands, but our surrounding communities. So we started a committee, and from there, we started fundraising. So we started looking into some grants as well. So I applied for grants and made it my mission to get this done for my kids, the community, and future families, no matter how much time and energy I would have to commit. These updates will not only just benefit our community, but will allow the surrounding communities facing the same struggle benefit from having a new park closer to them than they've had access to in years. Little by little, this small city could once again flourish and help the small family-owned businesses survive and allow them to continue to live in this community they call family. Mr. Chair and members, to the best of my knowledge, Meadowlands has never requested state bond funds. This is a new process for us, so I appreciate the support of Representative Lizegard, and I appreciate all of you listening to our requests. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor White. Members, any discussions? Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Councillor. Representative, do the tourists that visit the Zach Zimbog use this facility for gathering kind of a focal point?
So right next to the community center is actually one of the bird kiosks, which allows them to know where to go to find these birds and different things. The community center is also used for many of the birding festivities. So they would like to use that. You know, the updates are very necessary for that as well.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. That's it.
Thank you. Close the comments. Chair Lizegard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So every once in a while you run into somebody that inspires you. And the young woman sitting right next to me, I had an opportunity to meet. They run an establishment in a community of 130 people that surrounds, like she said, 40 miles in anywhere. So everybody comes to this one area. And then I find out that she's not only a city councilor, runs that, takes care of her kids, but then she's on every single committee to try to better her community. The less you have, the more it means to you, and this is exactly the type of individuals and communities that we need to support at a state level. So I would highly encourage you to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lizegard. Next on the agenda, House File 4421. Chair Lizegard, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. You guys all know this project has been before you, and this project, it continues to rise. It is to bring water to the East Range. It's the cost went up to $33 million. The board and the city has done everything to do a joint to bring people together, and this is gap funding. So I'd like to turn it over to my testifier, Mr. Dave Scullin.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee, committee members. My name is David Skelton. I'm the secretary treasurer of the independent joint powers entity known as the East Range Joint Water Board. I come before you this afternoon to request your assistance to help reduce a funding gap in our scheduled joint project. Thank you, Representative Lizegard, for introducing this bill. The East Range Joint Water Project is scheduled to begin with the commencement of the 2024 construction season. Multiple phases of this project will take place both in the city of Aurora as well as in Township of White. Both of these communities are located on the east end of the Iron Range. Today, our two communities participate in a water system that serves about 1,700 customers. Over the past number of years, the city and the town have initiated the first phase of our joint East Range drinking water project that is designed ultimately to serve a total of four East Range communities with potential service to 5,000 customers. The current project will also bring municipal water service to a neighborhood on the south shore of the nearby Embarrass Lake, currently serviced by a community well. After more than 10 years of planning and looking for funds for this $33 million project, Bids were finally awarded on February 2nd of this year. In order to move that project to a bid status, the city and the township had to increase their borrowing commitment to complete the funding package. To accomplish this, the city and the township had to commit to take on a $12 million rather than a $5 million drinking water revolving fund loan. Most significantly, we had to implement an associated water service rate ramp-up schedule that could, over the next 2.5 year course of the project construction, raise our customer water service rates to $75 per month, a rate that is vastly in excess of the PFA's calculated affordability rate for our customer base. This affordability rate is approximately $31.52 per month due to the city's exceptionally low LMI status, one of the lowest medium household incomes in the state at $32,287. As all of you already know, infrastructure projects costs have increased dramatically in recent years. For the East Range Joint Water Project, the engineer's cost estimate in 2020, the last year for which state bond funds were appropriated, was estimated to be $18.8 million. As previously stated, this project was bid this February and came in at $33 million, an increase of almost 75% since the last bond appropriation. Thus, the obvious reason for the funding gap that exists today. The City of Aurora, the Township of White, the citizens of the East Range are extremely thankful for the financial support from federal, state, and local agencies given for this project to date. On behalf of the East Range Joint Water Board partners and potential future partners, we are asking for your assistance to help close our funding gap. I would like to thank the committee for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Secretary Treasurer. Members, any discussions? Close the comments, Chair Lizagar.
I can't say it any better than he did. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 5082, Representative Fahnke. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members. I'm here with House File 5082 for Gibbs Farm. Gibbs Farm has been here before. We've been working on this for a couple of years, and I'll just hand it over so you can hear about the project.
Welcome, President Roberts. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. My name is Chad Roberts. I'm the president and CEO of the Ramsey County Historical Society, the owner and operator of Gibbs Farm. Thank you, Chair Lee, Representative Fahnke, and members of this committee. We appreciate being here today. Gibbs Farm is a national historic site, nationally listed historic site that has been serving Minnesota's youth and educators for 70 years. We're requesting $9.9 million for Gibbs Farm to build a new education building and some other site improvements that will allow this seasonal site to operate year-round and double the number of students that we can serve. We provide a unique out-of-classroom education experience for 15,000 elementary students every year on-site, which is our maximum capacity given the 12 weeks during the academic year that we can be open due to weather. In addition, outreach and digital programs reach another 5,000 students that cannot visit the site in person. And these students come from all over Minnesota. This is a regional asset. Slightly more than half of these 15,000 students come from places outside of Ramsey County. And that's why we're here today. Most are within 90 miles of the Twin Cities, but people do drive further than that. We do have a few visitors from our sister state, Wisconsin, across the river. We've been back to pre-COVID visitation levels for over a year. To put that in perspective, that's 240 schools sending 700 classrooms worth of students to Gibbs Farm. We work with hundreds of teachers every year, obviously, and these are incredible people. If you've ever worked with good elementary educators, you know that they're miracle workers in the classroom. They struggle with teaching certain topics, things that we specialize in, indigenous culture, early Minnesota agriculture, and some STEM topics for young students. We address these topics in our tours that combine maker activities, participatory theater, hands-on activities and programs, and all of our school programs specifically address Minnesota education standards in history, social studies, and STEM. There is not another program like this in the state of Minnesota. Why it all matters, of course, is because students that participate in field trips do better in school. A study a few years ago from Rice University had a sample size of 6,000 students, studied over a couple of years. Their overall academic performance went up significantly. Disruption in the classroom went down even more, and their engagement in school. Our program and programs like it are things that students need to really do well. Making Gibbs Farm available to more students every year will improve academic outcomes across our region, and honestly, it's the reason why we're doing this work at the Historical Society. We've already developed and tested programs with different partners, including the Bell Museum that moved in across the street a few years ago. We simply don't have the capacity to actually operate the joint tour we developed and tested. We both want to do it. This project will increase our capacity to 30,000 students every year for field trips, provide home for a new year-round after-school program, provides appropriate shelter for Dakota people engaged in cultural programming at the site, and at a museum-quality preservation facility that will help us keep track of the 4.5 million things that the Historical Society actually is responsible for. We're asking the state for $9.9 million for the shovel-ready project. These are the last dollars needed. Local matching funds in excess of $10 million have already been raised and secured. Of that, some federal funding, $750,000, does expire in 2 years. So we're kind of on the clock on this. This is our fifth year participating in this particular process. We've got a bill in the Senate as well, and I really hope you'll support it this year. So thank you. Happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, President Roberts. Members, discussion. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Roberts. I've toured this two, three times now, and I certainly am someone who likes to see historic structures restored and used. That said, can this be phased at all? Could you do it in two parts?
President Roberts.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl. It could be done in more than one part. Of course, everything gets more expensive over time, as you're going to hear all day, but yes, we could.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Roberts, have you made a legacy request?
President Roberts.
Chair Lee, Representative Erdahl, we have secured some legacy funds for smaller projects to take care of 106 readiness and some other things in the pre-planning and community engagement phase of this project. We are anticipating a $250,000 chunk of support coming through the legacy program for specific furniture related to the exhibition building, or not the exhibition, but the collections facility. But the legacy funds themselves, as you are, I think, well aware, is not enough there to do this. And it would be the entire pie and then some. So that becomes a challenge.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Roberts. Yes, I'm aware that legacy does not usually fund large amounts like that, but the question was being asked around here, and I thought I would get the on-the-record answer.
Yes.
Thank you.
Additional questions, members? Seeing none, closing comments, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Appreciate the time. This is a good project. I hope that we can support.
Thank you, Representative Finke. Next on the agenda, House File 3669, Representative Igoe. Welcome, Representative Igoe. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Today we have House File 3669, which is a bonding capital investment request for $1.35 million for the city of Floodwood to do upgrades to their city's water and sewer infrastructure. And I'm here with the mayor of Floodwood, who's going to go over it, but I just got to say this is a small town in rural Minnesota that's doing a lot of work to expand their city and bring in economic investment. So it's a really exciting project. With that, I'll hand it over to my mayor.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Tad Farrell, mayor of Floodwood. The city of Floodwood is seeking $1.35 million in state funding to expand infrastructure along County Road 832, commonly known as Floodwood Road. The city would utilize the funding to expand water, wastewater, and streets for a 40-acre parcel the city is acquiring. The city would subdivide acreage into 40 to 50 lots of varying sizes to help spur both residential and commercial growth. The plan includes hydrants for fire protection and system flushing. The project is the number one priority for the city of Floodwood. Lack of water and sewer utilities affecting the ability for new families to move into the area as well as any business to expand or new businesses to build. Lack of water and sewer service also affects our school system. It is difficult for new teachers to find suitable housing and often commute over 40 miles one way for housing. Without proper water and sewer access, additional housing needs cannot be accomplished. Our median household income is $33,274, whereas St. Louis County's median household income is $53,344, and the state median household income is $74,593. Our low to moderate income percentage is 70.21%. Our tax base is considerably smaller than larger communities that surround Floodwood, and increasing property taxes has significant impact on our residents and businesses. A substantial amount of property within the city is tax exempt. Floodwood is located at the intersection of U.S. Highway 2 and Minnesota State Highway 73. Some would say that Floodwood is in the middle of nowhere, but I like to say that we're in the center of everything. Located 35 to 40 minutes from Duluth, Cloquet, Grand Rapids, Hibbing, and Moose Lake. Due to our geographical location, Floodwood serves as a regional hub for MnDOT Truck Station, DNR Forestry Station, St. Louis County Public Works Garage, Arrowhead Transit, as well as Floodwood Services and Training, which services adults with physical and mental health challenges. Floodwood is also home to a medical clinic that benefits underserved patients throughout northern Minnesota. It is very important for the city of Floodwood to undertake infrastructure expansion that will help enhance residential development and increase commercial and retail activity. On behalf of the city, I am asking for your support to continue to keep the city of Floodwood in the center of everything. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for your consideration on our project.
Thank you, Mayor Farrell. Members, any questions? Representative Kozlowski.
Thanks, Chair Lee, and Rep Igo for bringing the bill forward. You're on fire today with bills, and to Mayor for making the trip down. I know Floodwood well. I played a lot of basketball against your teams. I'm excited to see this project coming forward. I think this is an example of when, as a Minnesota, we have over 106,000 unit shortage in housing. To see the forward thinking and helping to grow our businesses and our housing and our tax bases. I'm curious what kind of housing, you say a mix of residential and commercial, would you envision? And just thanks for your vision for this.
Well, Mayor Farrell.
It would be anywhere from market rate housing to affordable housing to accessible housing for people with disabilities. And it would be, it's very important so that we can grow our tax base, but also help our struggling schools with enrollment.
Representative Kozlowski.
Just one quick follow-up. Would you envision like multi-unit family housing or single or a mix of different types?
We are looking at multi-unit duplexes and single-family houses.
Additional questions, members? Seeing none, quick closing comments, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the discussion today. Thank you to my mayor for coming down. Again, this is a project that the city of Floodwood, in as a whole, the mayor, the council, its people, are thinking about how they can be dynamic and expand their city for generations to come. This project in front of us would get them on that path. So I hope we can earn your support today, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Representative Igo. Next on the agenda, House File 4944, Representative Feist. Welcome, Representative Feist. I understand that you have a DE1 amendment for reference. Can you explain the DE1 amendment and please proceed?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment simply switches it from a cash bill to a bonding bill or a GO bill.
Please proceed.
Yep, thank you so much. House File 4944 is a bill brought to me by the Rice Rice Creek Watershed District. I'll just make 3 points, and then I'll turn it over to my expert. And we do have an engineer who is available remotely if there are any highly technical questions. So this is a really urgent bill. It relates to flooding that already is happening and potential future catastrophic flooding along the I-35W corridor. It is primarily impacting environmental justice areas of concern. The communities that are prone to flooding and already flooding are very low-income neighborhoods along the 35W corridor, including in my district. And it will impact many cities and communities across or along I-35W, and I urge your support. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Tom Shuck, the administrator for the Rice Creek Watershed District.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. My name is Nick Tomczak. I am the administrator for Rice Creek Watershed District. Good afternoon, committee members. One of Rice Creek Watershed District's main priority is to mitigate flood risk throughout the watershed district. I'm here in support, obviously, of House File 4944, the funds to be used at the Jones Lake Project. This is a critical initiative aimed at reducing flood risks, which protect our communities in the I-35W corridor. I'm not only here on behalf of Rice Creek, but also the cities of New Brighton, Roseville, and St. Anthony Village. Those entities petitioned Rice Creek to help mitigate the flood risk within this area. This is evidenced by their resolutions and letters, which I understand are within the packet of materials you received. These cities need for action following the past events, notably the 2011 rainstorm and its subsequent flooding. It's crucial to recognize the numerous affected communities are areas of environmental justice concern, as noted by the representative Feist, emphasizing the urgency of our actions. To date, significant dollars have been expended by all the parties involved, showing a shared commitment to addressing the challenges posed by flooding. The watershed approach adopted in this project features the comprehensive and integrated strategy being pursued to effectively mitigate these flood risks. Jones Lake Project represents a strategic replumbing, if you will, effort striking a balance between storage on the landscape and then conveying water to those locations to enhance the resiliency under climate change impacts. The Jones Lake Project builds upon the successful model and the work that we've demonstrated already at Hanson Park in New Brighton, with Jones Lake serving as that key water storage component. Despite our efforts to date, We are still looking for funding options. We've tried the multi-purpose drainage management grant, which is offered by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the water quality and storage grant offered by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, building resilient infrastructure in communities funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We are on DNR's Flood Hazard Mitigation Grant Program since April of 2019, and as of yet have not heard any advancement there. We have explored other funding options as well. We are currently applying for the implementation grant for stormwater resilience that's offered by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Even if we are funded under that, we will come up short of the funds necessary to do this project. We emphasize that Jones Lake Initiative is crucial for addressing the existing and the future flooding risk, particularly under climate change conditions. Rice Creek's modeling, the engineering modeling, indicates a significant risk to the flooding of I-35W under the current conditions itself, and the road potentially being overtopped by floodwaters in excess of 2 feet. This project represents the necessary step in protecting our infrastructure and communities from such risks. I certainly welcome any questions, and I urge you to support House File 4944 and ensure the safety and well-being of the communities. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Members, any discussions? So one question that I have, you know, with the risk to I-35, what is the role of MnDOT if there's any this project?
Yes. Chair Lee, thank you for the question. The role of MnDOT is to provide the infrastructure, but its focus is primarily on its right-of-way and not the broader landscape, which contributes flooding stormwaters to that. So Rice Creek, as a watershed district, serves that role to identify these situations on the landscape. We haven't engaged MnDOT on multiple occasions, shared the engineer's model with them for their consideration. They would like to remain informed about our advancements in addressing the issue.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, close the comments, Representative Feist.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair Lee. Thanks so much to the experts at the Rice Creek Watershed District for coming to me with this really urgent problem and the solution. And thanks also for explaining that this isn't about pipes, it's about culverts, which apparently are really big pipes. So I've learned a lot. But I would urge you support for this really important bill impacting low-income community members along I-35W. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Next on the agenda, House File 5031, Chair Stevenson. Welcome, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill relates to a proposed pedestrian overpass over Highway 10 in Ramsey, connecting existing infrastructure on one side with a proposed development on the other side. By way of background, members, I'm a broken record talking about Highway 10. Mercifully, I think we're getting pretty close to the end of me having to tell people about how important Highway 10 is. Highway 10 carries more traffic on during weekday rush hours than 35W going north. And until the next 2 years, there are stoplights on Highway 10. Can you imagine if there were stoplights on 35W, how outrageous that would be? But this legislature last, 2 years ago now, I think, funded a conversion of that road to a freeway all the way through Anoka and Ramsey, and that work is underway actually right now, thanks to the folks on this committee and many others. We now have an issue where, like I said, we have some infrastructure that's already been developed on the north side of Highway 10, a proposal to build some new athletic facilities on the south side of Highway 10. And I think it's really important for us to make sure that pedestrians have a safe way to cross this roadway that we have invested so much in at the state level. So we are bringing a proposal before you to do a pedestrian bridge. Mr. Chair, I do have a representative from the city of Ramsey here who can say more.
Welcome, City Administrator. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Brian Hagan, City Administrator for Ramsey. The only thing I would add to what Representative Stevenson said is really just emphasize the existing trail and park network that exists today. We've got a Anoka County regional trail that comes through town and was ultimately realigned in the past, and then we have a Mississippi Regional Trail. We also have Mississippi West Regional Park, and this pedestrian crossing over 10 would really connect all of that. Another emphasis to add and add on to what Representative Stevenson said is that youth athletic facility. They plan to generate thousands of visitors a year coming from outside of Ramsey and really just allowing everyone to go across Highway 10 in a safe manner to access our growing downtown area that has commercial retail opportunities as well as housing and a hotel is being built as we speak today as well. So really connecting that and having that safe access.
Thank you, City Administrator. Chair Stevenson, there's a unspecified appropriations. Can you address that for us, please?
Mr. Chair, the total cost of the project is estimated to be $7.5 million, and we would be asking for the state to pick up 50% of that amount.
Thank you. Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, any closing comments?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you both. Next on the agenda, House File 3686, Representative Nash. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 3686 is a project for Lake Town Township in my district. It has a problem with a pipe that runs through a lake, and my testifier, Lake Town Township Supervisor, is going to go into the details for you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello. My name is Pete Paris. I'm the chair of Lake Town Township Board of Supervisors. I'd like to thank the chair and the representatives for allowing me to testify here today. In 1973, the township entered into an orderly annexation agreement with the cities of Chaska, Victoria, and Waconia. In the early 1980s, houses around the lakes in Lake Town Township had septic systems that were negatively affecting the lakes and streams. Because the annexation was expected in about 20 years, the interim solution was put into place. The solution was a community 201 water system that had a life expectancy of about 20 years, which is about the time of expected annexations. These systems should have been sunsetted in the early 2000s, where over 20 years passed for life expectancies. In addition, the materials that were used in the 80s are far below the code that exists today. Many of these systems run between the houses and the lake shores. They also run through the watersheds in the township and one portion beneath a lake, like Representative Nash said. There are currently 209 homes, or 35% of the township households, on our 201 system. The other 65% have their own private septic systems. The 4-inch white piece of pipe was originally installed in the 1980s. You can see how small it is, how thin it is. The 8-inch green piece of pipe is what code currently mandates. You can see the difference in them. The map in your packet of the township 201 systems, that's the big map right there, is the 201 systems highlighted. You can see that the three lakes that are adjacent to these systems. Bolton and Mink engineering firm estimates the cost of the project at $21.4 million. On the first page of your packet, you will see the breakdown of the funding. Please note the residents on the system are bearing 33% of the cost, about $30,000 to $35,000 per household. If the residents paid 100% of the cost, their assessment would be about $102,000 per household. Without funding from the state, we cannot move forward. This is why we are asking for the funding. And a little note, a year and a half ago Christmas, one of our lift stations, the pipe broke inside the lift station. That lift station, four other lift stations go into that pipe. By the time our sewer technician got out there and started pumping down so he could fix said pipe, we pumped out 7,500 gallons out of that said lift station, which was only 50 feet from the lake. So we have roughly about 12 of them that are under 100 feet away from all these lakes and that. So with that, I want to thank you for your time and consideration and any questions.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. Does this impact your drinking water at all?
No,
Chair.
No, it doesn't. Thank you, Representative. No, it doesn't. Everybody's on private wells. Most of these systems, when they went into effect, were cabins at one time, and as time has gone on, now they've become houses on the lakes. So, but no, everybody's on private wells at this time.
Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you.
So, Board Chair, I see on here you said that there's $2.3 million pending from the federal government for pending grant approval. So is that pending grant approval from the state, or what are you waiting for?
Congressman Emmer told us that there was probably going to be earmarks this year. They have indicated there's earmarks. We did fill out the form and do it, and we're also working with Senator Smith's office also. This would be for the year 2025, so they take all the applications in and sometime later on in the year we'll know about that.
And then, do you know, is there a cap on that at 2.3, or can you all request more for from our federal delegation?
They never tell you how much the cap is. They just kind of say put it out there, and that's where we kind of, if you look at the numbers there, that's where we kind of came out with was $2.3 million, so it comes out to be $21.4 million.
Thank you. See no other questions. Let's close the comments. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you look at this pipe, the smaller one, in many places it is quite fragile. If it were to break, it would go into lakes and other areas. Carver County is a very quickly growing community. There would be a lot of stresses on this pipe, and we would ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Next on the agenda, House File 3568, Representative Hill. Welcome, Representative Hill. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. I'm Representative Josiah Hill. I represent District 33B in the East Metro. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on House File 3568 with you today. As housing costs rise, more and more people across our state are left without stable housing. And Washington County is not immune to these housing needs. And to address the crisis, they are committed to develop emergency housing options for those who are most in need. And unfortunately, there is a great need in this kind of housing across our state and certainly in Washington County. Without enough emergency housing, people face increased vulnerability. All people in Minnesota deserve a safe and dignified place to live, and we currently have zero permanent emergency housing beds available in Washington County. Recognizing the importance of emergency housing in fostering a caring community, Washington County is advancing the development of an emergency housing services building on its government center campus. The county has already invested $7 million, and they're asking for a critical infusion of $5 million to make that development evolve from a possibility into a reality. In the audience today, we have a large group of community members and county staff who are passionate supporters working to advance this project. And I also have here to my right Washington County Commissioner Michelle Clausen, and she's going to share additional details with you.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'm Michelle Clausen, Washington County Commissioner of District 5, which includes the city of Woodbury. I'm here to support the House File 3568. Washington County is behind in emergency housing capacity for our constituents when compared to other Minnesota counties. Washington County has zero permanent emergency housing for single units or single adults. Woodbury is the sixth largest city in the state. We are growing in population with the lack of emergency housing. Staff regularly sends our Washington County constituents who are unsheltered to neighboring counties who have available housing. We have a temporary hotel-based program, but it's consistently full, and the program ends in 2025. The proposed emergency housing services building will have 30 units, including bathrooms. This is a county-owned and operated building. The county will contract with an agency to provide 24/7 services. We will be able to provide for complex needs of individuals by having on-site wraparound services around such as economic assistance, job training and support, social services like mental health and veterans disability support. This request will fulfill the last needed funds to help us meet the goal, which is to alleviate the problem of homelessness in our county and in our state. Once the building is operational, we will reduce our reliance on existing shelter beds in neighboring counties, which would reduce capacity constraints across the Twin Cities metro area. Our Washington County Board and staff are committed to helping our unsheltered constituents grow and thrive in secure and dignified emergency housing. That is the mission of this project, but it's also my personal mission. It's my personal mission because I was on the campaign trail when my sister became homeless in Stillwater. This is where I learned Washington County doesn't have a homeless shelter. My family and I lost touch with my sister for almost 3 months while she was homeless in St. Paul. Right before I was sworn in, on the coldest day of the year, she came home to the east side of St. Paul, where we grew up. My sister was an A student. She was an all-conference soccer player for 4 years at Johnson High School. Later, she played soccer at Hamline University. She had at least 3 concussions from her sports playing. She identified as LGBTQ. She is our most vulnerable population. She suffers from episodes of psychosis, and she believes that she's okay. She needed this emergency shelter in Washington County, and more importantly, the wraparound services that I'm advocating for today. Being here is full circle for my family and for me, and I'm honored for this opportunity to testify in front of you today, and I want to thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any discussions? Seeing no questions, any closing comments, Representative Hill?
Well, thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. This is an important project, and unfortunately, the need is great and growing. For those who are interested on the committee for more information, stop by my office or shoot me a note, and I'll bring one of these short video presentations that outlines the project in detail. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Next on the agenda, House File 4282, Representative Dotsuff. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the House Capital Investment Committee, thank you for hearing your hearing of the House File 4282 for Northern Light Special Education Academy Cooperative and Area Special Education Cooperative. The work that these two cooperative schools do spans many legislative districts, which is why I'm proud to have Representative Scraba, Zaleskar, Lisselgaard, Burkle, and Keel as co-authors on this bill. Colleagues, our state constitution says that it's the duty of legislation to establish a general and uniform system of public schools, and that the legislature shall make such provisions by taxation or otherwise to secure a thorough and effective system of public schools throughout the state. There's no doubt that as a legislature, we fund education. Pretty obvious. We also give school districts around the state options of generating revenue through construction projects and operating expenses. There are districts, though, that slip through the cracks, and that's what I'm discussing today. These two special education cooperatives, their member school districts, do not have the same tool to create and raise revenues to build or upgrade facilities. They need our help today, folks. These are unique situations. These schools care and educate the students with the highest needs. Currently, these educators are doing what they have to do, some with no facility whatsoever. Some are doing it from home. Or in the case of Northern Lights Special Academy, they are working in an old and antiquated building. With me today for a brief summary is Barb Mackey from Northern Lights and Tiffany Littman from Area Special Education Cooperative.
Welcome, directors. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Lee and members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Dot Smith, for championing this bill, this bipartisan bill, alongside Representatives Scarba, Zaleznikar, Burkle, Keel, and Liz Lagarde. We are honored to address you today regarding the critical needs of special education students in Minnesota. My name is Tiffany Littman, Executive Director of the Area Special Education Cooperative, and I am joined by Barb Mackey, Assistant Director of Special Education at Northern Lights Academy. Together, we represent the voices of students spanning a vast area of northern Minnesota. Northern Lights Academy is located in northeastern Minnesota. Serves students with severe disabilities across 6,000 square miles spanning 12 districts, as well as serving Indigenous students from Fond du Lac and Mille Lacs bands. Currently, the students are split between two inadequate locations, hindering their educational experience. House File 4282 seeks $6 million in bonding to purchase or construct a facility tailored to students' needs. This investment would consolidate these two programs under one roof, providing a safe and conducive learning environment, which is most cost efficient. Despite efforts of Northern Lights Academy, many students still wait proper accommodations due to the space limitations, hampering their educational opportunities. Similarly, the Area Special Education Cooperative serves students with diverse needs within 11 member districts covering 3,300 square miles in northwest Minnesota. House File 4282 seeks to construct or renovate a level 4 facility to address a critical gap in services for students with high needs. Currently, the nearest facility is 100 miles away, leaving students with limited options and potentially forcing them on home-based learning, placing significant burdens on families. Furthermore, students with significant behavior challenges within school settings can detrimentally impact the learning environment for all students. Many students face challenges in traditional school environments, impacting their ability to learn effectively. We wish to highlight a particular success story, a student formerly considered unable to thrive due to aggressive and disruptive behaviors, was enrolled at Northern Lights Academy. Despite initial concerns from parents that their child was bound to fail, the student has flourished and is successfully transitioning back to their resident district, on track to graduate and even obtain their driver's permit. This student's journey illustrates the transformational impact of personalized education for students with diverse needs. We understand the financial constraints faced by our member districts and the unique nature of our situation. While our member districts are poised to access funds through the Cooperative Facilities Lease Levy Authority granted by legislation last May, it would only total $2.9 million, and additional assistance is crucial to project success. We acknowledge that school districts generally do not receive funds for facilities projects, but we both find ourselves in exceptional circumstances. We are aware that similar projects have been funded across the state by bonding bills and large company grants. State assistance is imperative to bridge this gap and ensure equitable access to education for all students, regardless of their geographic location and level of need. Members of the committee, we appeal to you today for your support of House File 4282 so that our highest need students in rural Minnesota have an equal right to quality public education within a safe and supportive environment. This funding will enable us to create transformative schools that meet the complex needs of our students while fostering their growth and well-being. Thank you for your attention and consideration today.
Thank you, Director. Director, are you going to speak too? If you do, then if you can limit your remarks to a couple minutes.
Actually, I can answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Representative Scraba.
You anticipated my question. Very good. Thank you, Chair Lee. Representative, members. I've toured this facility, and we as people, the work that these folks do and the work, it's not just in northern Minnesota. It's all of Minnesota. It's in the metro. It's everywhere. These are the vulnerable students. These are the ones that have a hard time just acclimating with society. And they get a group of them, a bunch of them. And now we're saying, oh, we don't have anywhere for you. They're in a, if I can say it even, dilapidated school where they're doing this out of. And they're running, how many buckets this year? And anyway, you tell me later. But they have buckets running around trying to keep this building going. And it's the least, in my opinion, it's the least we can do to help these folks. These are the kids, no fault of their own, with the mental health issues. Some are severe, some aren't severe. Some are apparently severe, but not as they can be acclimated. So it's they're in a position that they're drawing students from Two Harbors, Minnesota, down south of Duluth. This is how far they're going. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm happy. I'm sad that they have to travel that far, but I just want somewhere for them to go. And on both of these, there's two asks here, the front side and the back side. And I support both of them. And I just wanted to let you know that what I saw, not so much a question. I'll let someone else ask them questions. I just think it's time that we help the students. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dotseth and testifiers. First, help me out just a little bit. Maybe I missed this somewhere. Where is Northern Lights Academy?
Director.
Hi, thank you for the question. Northern Lights Academy actually is in two different buildings. One of them is in Cloquet, and the other is in Carlton. And granted, they're only 5 miles apart, but when I have a crisis situation in one of those buildings and I'm in the other, it takes me about 10 minutes to get there. So I can tell you that yesterday we had a crisis in one building and I happened to be in the other, and it took a while for us to get there and have that student be successful.
Director, can you identify yourself for the record real quick?
I'm sorry. I'm Barb Mackey, the Assistant Special Ed Director for Northern Lights Academy.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so I understand the number of students here, it says 2,400 students across the member districts. So that's in a widespread area. In your facility, how many students are there?
Director Mackey.
So currently there's 50 in ours. But we also have a waiting list of many students that cannot get in because I don't have enough space. and actually at the Area Special Education Cooperative, they don't have a facility like ours. And so their students are either at home getting very limited instruction, it's called home-based services, or they're attempting to keep them in their regular school buildings. The problem is that that disrupts the learning for everyone within their buildings, usually, because our students are the ones that have those major disruptions where classes might have to be cleared so that everybody's safe, or they might be yelling down the hall those words that you wouldn't want anyone to hear, which would disrupt their learning.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And now, I might be familiar with this type of setting. We have in my district, the town of Cosmas, and they serve those special education students who are severely challenged, and I mean, basically throwing chairs through windows and those types of things. And I was author of the bill to renovate the Cosmas school for this type of use. And is that the type of students that you are dealing with?
Director Mackey.
Yes, it is. So our students do currently throw chairs and sometimes through windows or sometimes across rooms. Our staff have to have a large amount of professional development so that they know how to provide as safe a space as possible. Unfortunately, the space we have now is not set up for those particular children, and so it isn't as safe as we can make it, and that's part of the problem. We need a better space that is set up exactly for them, that doesn't have all of the things that might get used.
Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that explanation. That I think certainly makes more clear to me the needs you have, and should to other members as well. I mean, in Cosmas, they had to move the electrical outlets and all of these things. And so with that in mind, you know, I certainly hope that we can help you out.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Closing comments, Representative Dotsoff.
Thank you. In closing, Chair Lee, I want to thank you for the hearing today, for this bill, and these testifiers. This is important work that they do, and the facilities are much needed. Thank you again for your consideration.
Thank you. And members, I do want to acknowledge former Representative Sundin, who's here joining us, who is working on this issue too. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3379, Representative Carroll. And Representative Carroll, I understand you have a DE amendment for reference.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Welcome, and please proceed.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The DE is before you. I'd like to move it.
We're not taking any formal action, so you can just explain the DE and proceed with your presentation.
The DE is to reduce our request, realizing the budgetary limitations that this committee is facing in terms of all the projects and the target we've been given. And so Plymouth is willing to be a team player in this effort and come and phase the project. So we'll start out with pre-design and design and then come back for more. So that said, let me just say that we were scheduled to hear or to tour this project on the last day of our first leg of tours. So it was a Friday afternoon, actually Friday evening. It was late, everyone was tired, and Rep. Franzen and I agreed, thank you, Rep. Franzen,
right,
to perhaps do this in committee, and that's what we're doing today. So once again, Plymouth is willing to be a team player.
Harry Franzen.
So
together,
Ned. And let me just draw the committee's attention to a letter here from the Minneapolis Regional Chair, President and CEO of the Minneapolis Regional, extolling the virtues of this project. And I'll stop now and turn it over to my testifier, Plymouth's Mayor Jeff Washey.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Washer. I'm the mayor of Plymouth. Mr. Chair and committee members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about our Plymouth City Center. The city of Plymouth is requesting $7.2 million in state bond funds to invest in regional infrastructure to revitalize the heart of our city. Plymouth City Center infrastructure serves thousands of visitors from outside of Plymouth each year for hockey, concerts, and events. And we're asking for state bond funds to support regional use of Plymouth's infrastructure. State bond funds are needed for the infrastructure improvements such as road work, regional stormwater ponding, a public parking ramp, and other vital community benefits. The project will improve walkability, pedestrian safety, create community gathering spaces, strengthen mobility and transit connectivity, allow for bus rapid transit, bolster environmental sustainability, provide public parking, support housing opportunities, which also includes affordable housing. The vision for Plymouth City Center is to cultivate a vibrant and active downtown area, complete with infrastructure and amenities that benefit all who come here to work, play, live, shop, and eat. The original bill asked for $32 million from the state, which is half the cost of the $64 million project. Today, we are asking for $7.2 million to cover the pre-design and design costs of the City Center project. This project has far-reaching impacts that will benefit all regional users who rely on and use Plymouth City Center infrastructure. Thank you for your consideration and support of this project.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, any discussions? Seeing none, closing comments. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. And members, this is an important project for the City of Plymouth and the region. It'll help bolster economic activity, which will benefit the state as well. As you know, Plymouth is the seventh largest city in Minnesota, the fourth largest economy, the largest med tech sector in the country. And it's critical to keep that going. So I'd appreciate support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carroll. Next on the agenda, House File 3497, Representative Wolgamott. Welcome, Representative Wolgamott. Please proceed. And then Representative Perryman is also joining. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and my fellow members of the Capital Investment Committee. It is a great honor to be here today to present House File 3497, which is a bill for $400,000 in GO bonds for pre-design of a new St. David's Center facility in St. Cloud. We are bringing this request to you today, Mr. Chair. It's a small request, but it is going to have a huge impact on our community in St. Cloud. As you've heard, we have child care struggles facing families throughout Minnesota, and the lack of availability, especially in greater Minnesota, is wreaking real havoc on families. We're also in central Minnesota lacking in critical children's mental health services, with families facing long wait lists for urgently needed care. That's why we're proud to be partnering with St. David's Center. They've been a leader in child and family development for 60 years. And they're doing that work in the metro area. We want to bring that to central Minnesota. That's why we're bringing the bill forward. We have a testifier who's going to get more in the weeds of where this funding will go. But, Mr. Chair, I'm also very honored to be partnering with this project, on this project, with my seatmate, Representative Bernie Perryman. She has been very influential in bringing this project to my attention. We went and took a tour of the site together, and I'm really proud to partner with her to be a champion for this project. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to yield to Representative Perryman.
Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott. It has been a pleasure to work with Representative Wolgamott on this project. It's going to cover so many pillars that we're talking about in session, from child care to education to mental health. And if we get ahead of it and we're proactive with the model which St. David's has created, and you'll hear about real quickly here, you'll see the money that we're requesting is going to be tenfold in what it will do for rural medicine and rural Minnesota and greater Minnesota. And so I'm very thankful that you have welcomed me here today, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Wonderful. Good afternoon, Chair Lee and committee members. My name is Julie Shortall. I'm the CEO of St. David's Center. As Representative Wogomot referenced, St. David's Center has a 63-year history of proven results. Today, we are regarded as a regional leader in child and family development with a staff of 525 serving over 6,500 children, parents, and individuals with special needs. Through early childhood education, a range of mental health and developmental therapies, social services, including early childhood home visiting, children's mental health case management, and disability support. We provide services right now at our two centers in Minnetonka and in downtown Minneapolis, and in 30 partner sites, including schools, child care centers, and faith communities, resulting in increased access to mental health and therapeutic support. We're here today to request $400,000 in pre-design funding to determine the full scope and total cost of building and equipping a state-of-the-art education and intervention center in Stearns County. We have the support of the Stearns County Board in this effort, as you can see from the letter in your packet. St. David's Center has a wait list of 1,800 children in the Twin Cities. If the need is that great in a community where we already serve 6,000 children, it is not difficult to imagine what the wait lists are like in the community in greater Minnesota like Stearns County. Our drive comes from both the prevalence, severity, and complexity in needs facing children and families across the state, and the knowledge that the sooner we intervene, the better the outcomes for children, for families, and for our whole community. Just consider these deeply concerning data points. 1 in 5 children has a diagnosable mental health need, yet only 20% have access to services. Pre-K children are expelled at a rate of more than 3 times than that of children in K through 12. And imagine what that communicates to young children about school failure before they even enter school. 1 in 6 children has a developmental delay or disability, and 1 in 34 children has an autism diagnosis. If we don't identify and address these needs early, schools and parents bear the weight in the short and immediate term, and society bears the weight at an even bigger cost in the long term. Our solution is to increase access to services that change children's trajectories, developmental trajectories, during the most critical time in brain development, and thereby setting them on a path to success. To that end, we were so honored to be invited by the United Way of Central Minnesota, the business community of St. Cloud, Stearns County, and the representatives that sit here with me today to dialogue about how we would collaborate to grow services and the workforce to address child care crisis and the mental health and support needs for children and families who we cannot afford to leave behind. So that dialogue resulted in a proposal that we have before you today, as well as our wholehearted commitment to build and leverage a public-private partnership necessary to address the severity of the child care shortage in outstate Minnesota and children's mental health needs in greater Minnesota. So together, we aim to build a large multidisciplinary early education and intervention center that will serve at least 1,500 children annually. This pre-design funding will be the first step in that project, and we ask for your support and thank you for your consideration. And I thank Representative Wogomot and Representative Perryman for championing this request.
Thank you, Chief Executive. Members, any discussion? And so to the Chief Executive and to both representatives, the letter from Stearns County state that they will be the government sponsor, but, you know, with regards to bonding, they will be the public owner of the project. So just want to make sure that we have that distinction that the Stearns County will be owning the project as we move forward.
Thank you, Chair Lee. We understand that fully.
Closing comments, representatives.
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 3497. Again, this is a small request, but it will have an incredible impact. Just think about the 1,500 to 2,000 children that this facility can serve. Think about the impact that it will have
on them and their lives and our entire community. I'm so thankful to St. David's Center for being willing to bring the incredible work that they do to our community. I'm thankful to Stearns County for their partnership in this. It's just great, great collaboration at all levels. And I'm really grateful that we have the ability here in this committee to do our part and support the incredible work that's being done with this project. So thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'll let my seatmate have the final word.
Representative Perryman.
Thank you. Very short. This is a really good project, a really good request. So I ask that you make this a great bipartisan yes, and we'll see you in St. Cloud at the grand opening.
Thank you both. Last bill up on the agenda for today is House File 4473. Welcome to your committee, Representative Kozlowski. Please proceed.
All right, Chair Lee and fellow members of the Bonding Committee, thanks for the opportunity to be here and present House File 4473. As a proud Duluthian and a former employee of the City of Duluth, I know how important this is to our community and to our surrounding region, and that's why this is the top priority for the City of Duluth, but as well as for our region. I'm also really grateful that we have a great show of our regional delegation and bipartisan support. Because, again, this project would service the water for Duluth, Proctor, Hermantown, Rice Lake, and that makes up over 103,000 residents, for some whom this is their only source of safe, reliable, and clean water. Our House File 4473 is a $6.719 million request that would repair the roof and building structure of the Lakewood Water Treatment Plant, which was built in the late 1800s. And if you've been to Duluth for Graham's Marathon, maybe you've run the course or you've just driven up the North Shore, you are bound to have seen this structure that where all the water from our community is drawn from and is over a century old, and we got to bring it into our modern century. It's still housing all of our original equipment. So as I said, this serves over 103,000 residents for our region. This city has stretched our 100-plus-year-old equipment to the max and well beyond its granular life, and the filtration system is in danger of complete failure, and we need to act urgently and soon. Here with me today, we save the best for last, which is my former colleague, the perfect person in the face of mounting challenges, and a really amazing, dedicated team to be here with you. He's the Director of Public Works and Utilities for the City of Duluth, and have to say has been award-winning water for Duluth. So I'll hand it over to my testifier.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee, members of the House Capital Investments Committee, and thank you, Representative Kozlowski, and stealing the majority of my thunder here. I'm Jim Benning, Public Works Utilities Director for the City of Duluth, and today I'll be providing a brief summary of Duluth's bonding request for improvements to the Lakewood Water Treatment Plant. The water plant is the sole source provider of drinking water for the cities of Duluth, Rice Lake, Proctor, and Hermantown, which span three legislative districts. The four cities have a combined population over 104,000 residents. The water plant also serves two major hospitals and three colleges. The pump station was constructed in 1898, and to put that in perspective, that was 33 years after the Civil War ended. The treatment building on the other side of the road was built in 1977. That's 47 years ago, and is showing its age. The water coming from Lake Superior is basically free, but the treatment, pumping, storage, and maintenance of the system is not. Duluth is well aware of its obligation to pay for its own improvements with its own money. The Duluth Public Utilities Commission has approved annual rate increases for the past 10 years and recently passed a resolution authorizing a rate increase of 9.25% annually for the next 5 years. That equals over 45% over the next 5 years. Even with this new rate increase, we're still facing a shortfall of revenues to complete improvements to the plant. Recently, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency conducted an inspection of the plant. The results of the inspection highlighted the deficiencies that we were already aware of, but the EPA's regulatory requirements have dramatically accelerated the timeline for corrective action. The projects for the bonding request are broken into five separate projects. The plant itself has six filters. Imagine a room this size full of water, and at the bottom of that is coal, gravel, and sand, and the water filters through it. Only five of those were ever constructed in 1977. Why the sixth one wasn't, I have no idea. But the EPA says we now have to install that. In addition to installing that sixth filter, there are the remaining five that have not seen the light of day in 47 years, and they need to be rehabilitated. In addition to that, the pump house roof, it's a 125-year-old roof. It's slate roof, original to the building, and needs to be replaced. And there are two other smaller projects for mixers and pumps that put chemicals into the treatment system to provide safe drinking water for the community. The total construction cost and engineering cost for these five projects is $13.438 million, of which we're requesting $6.71 million in bond proceeds and the city paying the other 50% match to that. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House File 4473. The passing of this bill will help ensure Duluth comply with the requirements of the EPA and continue to provide one of the most important things that cities do, provide safe drinking water. This obligation is not a nice thing to do, but a necessity for the citizens and businesses of Rice Lake, Hermantown, Proctor, and Duluth. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative, Director. You're replacing the slate with slate? 125 years, that's a pretty good lifestyle for a roof.
Chair Lee and Representative Scraba, I don't think we've gotten that far in the design, and a lot of that is going to be up to the State Historical Preservation Office, what they're going to let us do. If they say we have to replace it with slate, then that's what we'll do.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. That's I just picturing the weather off the lake and where it's located. If there were fiberglass shingles, you might be replacing more often than the slate ones. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Representative Scrab was also suggesting that it not be a flat roof when you do it. And also, is this registered as a historic building?
Director.
Chair Lee. Representative Erdahl, I'm not sure, but I believe once we begin the process, we're definitely going to have to go to the State Historical Preservation Office. And it certainly appears to be, from observation, those of you who've seen it, it looks like a castle. Most people don't know what it is. We would definitely treat it as if it were historical. It's one of our landmarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, sir, I would certainly expect that this could, if it is not right now, be registered as a historic building. And I appreciate that you are approaching it in that regard, because I like to see it restored the way it was.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As you probably don't know, I really am a big fan of wastewater treatment plants and clean water. You know, nobody should have to drink from bottled water. And this project hits the whole sweet spot. It's multi-jurisdictional, just like my project in Alexandria. Just got to shoot that out. It's true infrastructure. And the matching capital investment from the Duluth Local Fund, I understand, is ready to go as well.
Director.
Chair Lee and Representative Branson.
Branson, yes.
Branson,
from
thank you.
Originally from Duluth.
The water fund in Duluth is an enterprise fund, so any money that is taken in as revenues or expended comes out of that fund. So we will be the only funding local match will be through the water fund. It won't be through the general fund or any other funding source.
Representative Franzen. Close the comments. Representative Kozlowski.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair and members, for this robust, great questions. You know, if we want to sustain and expand, everything really depends on this critical infrastructure that for a city that's kind of like a hot dog, it's long and short. It's really important. And as you heard, basing 45% rate increases, really ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski and Director. Members, that includes our agenda for today. Our next meeting is on Monday, April 8th. This meeting is adjourned.